Welcome to the fourth episode of the It's Been Said podcast. I'm your host, SAI Executive Director Lisa Ramey. Each show is dedicated to conversations on leadership as we further SAI's mission to support, encourage, and develop Iowa's educational leaders and learners. In this episode, hear from Kristen Rickey, Superintendent of the West Delaware County Community School District, has been named the 2022-2023 Iowa Superintendent of the Year by the School Administrators of Iowa. She has served as the District Superintendent and Director of Special Education since 2011 and was previously principal at McKinley Middle School in Cedar Rapids. Her career began as a special education teacher at Marion High School in Marion. She is a University of Iowa graduate with a bachelor's degree in psychology, a master's degree in special education, and a doctorate in educational policy and leadership studies. Welcome, Kristen.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you, Kristen, for taking time to visit with us. Let's just go ahead and get started. So, Kristen, from your perspective, what makes a successful superintendent?
Well, you know, I think there are a lot of things, but the starting point for me is you really need to love what you do and recognize what a gift it is to be able to do this work. It's such important work and you have such an opportunity to make a contribution that keeping that mindset really helps me in times that are challenging because there will be challenging times, but keeping that mindset of just what a gift it is to be involved and be able to be a part of something so important is really the place to start. But beyond that, I think being able to work really well with your team and have faith in your team is a really important part of the work. It's such a complex role. You certainly can't do it alone. And to put your confidence and your strength in your team is what's going to make you successful in the end.
Yeah. Thank you, Kristen, for those comments. I so agree when you say it's a complex role and you can't do it alone. So need others for sure. So from your perspective, what is the most important role of a superintendent?
So, you know, as I said, I think having really strong teams in place is very, very important. And so you need to make sure that those teams are all working towards the same end. And so the role of superintendent is really to make sure that everyone is crystal clear on what the long-term goals are and how we're going to get there. And then the superintendent's role is to make sure that we provide the resources to accomplish that. So that might mean time, could mean monetary resources, professional development, clarity on that direction, or anything else. But the most important role is to create those strong teams that ensure that they know the vision and the goals, and then empower them and support them in doing that work.
Yeah. You know, this next question kind of connects to what you were just talking about. So when you think back to when you first began in your role as the West Delaware County Superintendent, you talked about really helping people know what those goals are. So what are some of those steps that you took as you began in your superintendent role?
So when I first came to West Delaware, there were lots of good things happening and lots of what I like to call pockets of excellence, all sorts of positive things happening around the district, but they weren't necessarily aligned to any long-term vision or goal. And so lots of good work happening, but it wasn't connected. It didn't have the synergy that it needed to really get the district ahead and really serve our students, our community well. So I felt that my first role was to help clarify that direction. And, you know, it would have been a lot easier if I had just said, here's the direction and this is what we're going to do, but that would not have been successful. So we really took a step back and thought planfully about how to do that and how to include as many voices as possible. So we took about a year to do that. And we made sure that we met with and listened to as many people as we could to try to make sure that everybody was represented in the district. So that means we spoke to all staff members, regardless of what their role is in the district. Every person who worked in the district had an opportunity to share their voice and their vision for our students and for our future. We worked with community members. And in doing that, we made sure that we very purposely included as many representatives as we could. So we looked at all the economic sectors. Do we have agriculture represented? Do we have business? Do we have healthcare? Do we have other members of the community, parents, non-parents? We have five communities that are served in our district. Do we have representatives from all of those communities? Do we have students involved? So we really worked very hard over multiple meetings to bring people together to listen to them about what do you want for our school system, for our students, our community. Then we met several more times to try to operationalize that and put it into a meaningful vision that we could really use to drive our decisions. So we spent a long time doing that. And I think that was absolutely the right work, because ever since then, we've used that vision to create our strategic objectives, our annual plans, to report back on how we're doing, to communicate with our board. That really has been the driving force behind what we do. So knowing that everyone came together to identify what that direction was just really made it that much more impactful.
Yeah. How did you ensure that you got that variety of voices into your planning?
Yeah, well, it was actually several different stages and ways of approaching it. So firstly, we just communicated widely that we wanted as many voices as we could possibly get, and reassured people that the process would not be overly cumbersome or time consuming. They could give as much time or as little as they wanted, but we wanted everyone's voice. So we first tried to communicate that we were sincere, that we wanted to hear what people thought. And so we had an open invitation that everybody was welcome to attend. And then we took a look at the roles of people who had attended. We asked people to sign in and let us know who they were. So then we identified, okay, we have had people from this community and this community, but not the third community. We need to invite people. Same thing with our economic sectors. All right, we have people from business and industry. We have people from healthcare. We don't have anyone from agriculture. Let's identify someone we could purposely invite. So we started with an open invitation, and then we became more directive to try to get more people involved. We also talked to a lot of the leaders in the community to have them identify who are the other leaders in the community that maybe aren't in an official capacity, but are definitely a community leader that they need to be involved. And then we asked those people to help us identify who to invite. So we really spent a lot of time working to ensure that we had as many voices at the table as we could. And then, of course, with our staff, they were required to come.
Yeah. Well, you are so intentional. It's just awesome to hear about, Kristen. So good work. So as you know, the superintendency seems to be one of those very most rapidly changing roles in public education. In your opinion, what is the primary function of the superintendent today?
Well, I think that, as I've said, the primary function is really to set some clarity and direction so that everybody is aligned in their work and we can really have that synergy to get us to the best outcome for our students and our community. But I also think that the other really important role of superintendent is beyond the local district, to help be a voice for education and an advocate for education across the state and nationally as well. So you really need to work to go beyond your local district and reach out to really advocate for education in a bigger sphere. And from that, then you bring back information and resources to help the people in your district reach those goals that you've set. So it really is a kind of a back and forth process that's larger than just your local district.
Yeah, thank you for that. So as you know, Finland is known to have one of the best education systems in the world. And this past May, you returned from the Fulbright Leaders of Global Schools program in Finland, with much to think about, right? So please share with us your experience, what you brought back, how it has impacted you as a leader, how it may have impacted your district. Talk to us about what you learned.
Yeah, it was such a privilege to go on that adventure. So to be selected as a Fulbright Leader for Global Schools was just in and of itself amazing. But the experiences we had were just phenomenal. So first of all, I was able to travel with 8 other educational leaders from across the country. So I also learned from them, what does public education look like in Florida? What do charter schools look like in Connecticut? What does the system look like in Rhode Island? What does an alternative school look like in Arizona? So I learned so much from just the United States cohort that I went with. Then when we traveled to Finland, we just had the privilege of being able to experience multiple different K-12 type of schools, primary schools and secondary schools, as well as teacher preparation programs and vocational schools and so on. So we really got to experience their system. And the thing that struck me through all of those, the first thing that struck me was I started hearing people use the word trust, and I had read that Finland is based on trust, but I really didn't know what does that mean in practice. So I started paying attention, and every single person that spoke to us used the word trust without fail. Every single one, I was listening for it. And that was really interesting to me. There is trust in the system. There is trust in the government. There is trust in the teachers, trust in the administration, trust in the parents, trust in the students. Everybody trusts that everybody is doing the best they can to provide the best outcomes for students. So that really is a wonderful place to start your system with, is from a foundation of trust. The other thing that really struck me was their sense of time. And so they really did not feel a time pressure that I think we often feel in American schools. They had a grade independent learning. So students were at whatever curriculum they were ready for at that time, not based on necessarily your age or your grade, although it was very typical to what you see in American schools, but they didn't focus as much on what grade you are in as a starting point. And they actually referred to that as slow school, that students have as much time as they need to learn. They also have lots of time for family, for recess and break time. It was interesting to me that all the schools we saw had 60-minute classes, of which 45 minutes were instruction, 15 minutes was outdoor play. And they went outdoor without fail, 15 minutes every hour, which in my estimation, some of the things that we're seeing was stress, mental health and brain health issues and so on. The idea of 15 minutes of playtime outside every day was really intriguing to me. So they weren't as concerned about the time pressure as we are in the United States. And I think that boded very well for their students. Their educational outcomes are very high. And so it didn't take away from their learning to give them those kinds of breaks. And in fact, I think enhanced it. The other thing that really struck me in Finland was the idea that there are no dead ends. So students can pursue whatever course of study they're interested in, whether that be an academic course or more of a vocational oriented workforce development. And at any time they can change pathways. And that includes when they become an adult. If they choose to go back and further their education to take on a different career, that's free of charge in Finland. There are no dead ends. Everyone can continue doing whatever their passion is and pursuing that as a lifelong learning kind of an endeavor. They are financially supported in doing so, which I think takes a lot of pressure off deciding, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? Well, you can change your mind. You can go whatever path is best for you at that moment in time. So that was really interesting too. They do not have standardized assessments in Finland, except for one test when you reach high school age. Otherwise, they don't have any standardized assessments to speak of, not like we do here. I found that to be really interesting as well. The other thing I found to be really interesting is that there is an extremely high level of respect for their educators. And many, many people want to go into education. Their acceptance rates at their college preparation programs for teacher preparation are 10%. They reject 90% of applicants because they have so many people who want to become educators. And I envy that. I wish we had that here.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot of great learning that you had there. Did you have any time to dig in? Like, how did they create that trusting environment that you spoke of?
It was really interesting because it isn't just education, it's their entire culture. And it's been in place for a very long time. And in fact, what they were saying is they were just beginning, after the COVID pandemic began, they were just beginning to see some of the challenges that we're very familiar with in the United States. And so people starting to question teachers and administration at a very low level, but they were very surprised by that because it's not part of their culture. Their culture is that everyone is very content. Everyone supports one another. And so it's a part of their culture, which I found interesting because some people have said to me, well, what have you taken away from Finland that you can institute in your school here? And it's not that kind of learning. So one of the leaders from Finland, one of the educational leaders there said to us, and she has a quote. So I'd actually just share that quote. She said, The school functions within a national culture based on history. You can't force practices elsewhere because we don't share the same history. And that really helped me to take it into context. So the American education system has much to celebrate and much to be thankful for. And so does the Finnish system. And they were asking us, how are some ways that you evaluate reading instruction, for example? What are some ways that you assess student learning in that regard? And so they were trying to learn from us and we were trying to learn from them. And so the goal isn't to take the Finnish system and drop it into the American system, but rather take the best parts of the Finnish system, combine them with the best parts of the United States system, and come out with something better all the way around. So it's part of their history, and we have a different history. And so trying to take the best of what they have and learn from that, that's my goal.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Kristen. Thank you. So, you know, in Iowa and actually in the United States, we talk about making sure our students are future ready. So what steps have you taken to position the West Delaware County Community School District students to be future ready and to be ready for life in a digital age?
Right. So as I said, we worked really hard as a community to develop our vision. And part of the vision has three priorities: relationships, challenging academics in a real world context, and 21st century future ready skills. So it helps that it's a stated part of our mission. It has strategic objectives and we measure those. So every year, each of our buildings works with their team to develop an annual improvement plan with goals in each of those areas. So we have specific goals under future ready. And we measure those and we look for progress. So for example, both our high school and our middle school have worked with our AEA to clearly define some of those future ready skills. So flexibility and adaptability, how do you define those? How do you measure those? What are behavioral indicators of flexibility and adaptability? What about complex communication? What about collaborative problem solving? So they have the words, but more than that, they have the definition of those words. And so multiple times throughout the year, our teachers will assess our students on those skills and the students will assess themselves. And then the teacher and the student will come together to see if their assessment matches. And if not, they'll talk about how are we interpreting those skills and how can you demonstrate them, particularly in a workplace setting? So that's one way that we do that is we have operationalized those terms and we actually measure them and have set goals. Another thing that we're doing is in our high school beginning, they're working on it now, but over the next couple of years, students who graduate will have to present a portfolio in which they've collected artifacts of ways that they have demonstrated those future ready skills. And it could be in their classroom work or it could be in their outside of school work through volunteering or employment. But they really are tuned into what that looks like and knowing that they have to be held accountable to that. So they're looking for what does that mean for me and how do I practice that? So we worked very hard to operationalize those things in a meaningful way for students. So it's a focus in our work, not just in our language. And we have some other things. So for example, we have 4 federally registered apprenticeships. So our students are involved in apprenticeships that can will result in nationally recognized credentials. So we're trying to put those things into practice in meaningful ways.
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, throughout a thread of all of your answers, there's inclusion of lots of people in your work at West Delaware County Schools. So how have you generated that community support for your work?
You know, I feel so fortunate that this community has got to be one of the most supportive communities in the state. Folks here have been very supportive of education since well before I came and are well known for doing whatever they need to do to support our educational system. I'm very fortunate to be able to work in such an environment. So my role really is to make sure that I continue to give them what they need to offer us that support. So trying to communicate effectively about the decisions we're making and why we're making those, trying to listen to people when they have concerns and find multiple ways to enable them to have their voice be heard. So it really is a great gift to be able to start from a point of wonderful community support and then just try to maintain that through being available to talk to people, being visible in the community myself, being engaged in the community and trying to give back as much as people give to us, although that's not really possible, but just trying to support the community in their support of us. And so they've made it easy for me.
That sounds fascinating. So as you know, Kristen, the face of education is constantly changing. So in your opinion, what is one recent trend that you think will have a major influence on school districts in the years to come?
Well, you know, I suppose we hear this a lot, but I think it's very true. I think the lessons we learned from the pandemic and what happened during COVID will be lessons that will stay with us forever. And yes, those are very difficult times and still continue to be. And I don't want to diminish that, but we learned a lot from that time. We learned how to be very adaptable and flexible in ways that we had never anticipated. We identified how important it is to serve the whole child. So things that we had known before, but really came to the forefront. Food insecurity, when students didn't have access to school meals, became really critical. How do we get internet to our rural families so that they have access to learning outside of the doors of our school? How do we make sure that we meet the social emotional needs of students who are impacted by all the fear, the uncertainty, the isolation caused by the pandemic? So it really brought those things to the forefront, and we are not letting those lessons go. Now that we're back in school and our students are here within our walls, we're still focusing on how to be adaptable and flexible, how to meet their social emotional learning needs, how to make sure that everyone has the resources they need to be healthy and happy individuals. And so those things were really foundational skills that were really brought to the forefront. And I think that intense focus on those things is really going to serve us well in the future. And so I can even tell you, for example, we have a major construction project going on right now. It has not gone as planned because of supply chain issues and workforce issues. And we're well behind where we hope to be. And yet our staff and our students just absolutely rolled with it. They have had to be relocated to different spaces. They don't have the same learning environment they were used to when they left. And it has not been a problem because people are used to reacting quickly and being flexible and still maintaining a learning focus. And so those lessons from COVID have already served us well. And we won't forget those.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you mentioned was serving the whole child. And I 100% agree. I do believe that we as educators knew that before the pandemic, but it really did come to the forefront. And we now really, I think, understand how important that is to take care of those social emotional needs so that we can be our best selves to be learners in the classroom as well. So
yes. And you know what I think is interesting too is although we did know that, it really created a new enhanced focus on what we'd already been doing, but it also showed to the rest of our community how important that social emotional learning is and that it's not something extra or something fluff. It is a critical part of what we do. And the COVID pandemic really showed other people the value of that. And so we really have a lot of support in that work now.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. So all superintendents know that their board superintendent teams is so important to moving a school district forward. And your board has earned the Better Boardsmanship Award several times since 2012. So what might be some ways the board president and you as a superintendent collaborate so that you facilitate that work of learning, not only learning as you think about your students, but that learning as a board and a board superintendent team?
Yeah, you know, again, I've been so fortunate in this district. We have very strong community support and we have a very strong board and they are all doing this really meaningful work for all the right reasons. So I just feel very fortunate to start with. But despite how fortunate I am to have a strong board, we don't take that for granted. We don't assume that everyone knows how to lead, that everyone knows the learning priorities, or that everyone knows how to work together. We are very intentional about it and about learning what we need to learn. So my board is very dedicated to their own learning, and we make sure that we make that an intentional part of what we do. So we have structured into each of our board meetings an agenda item called Learning and Leadership, which takes extra time to an already busy board meeting and a lot of time commitment they've already given us, but they're willing to do that because they know how important it is. So learning and leadership often involves our staff presenting on a learning initiative that we're working on with students. So the board knows the work that we're doing and how they can support that. It often is a book study. So the board is continuing their own learning. Sometimes we go through, Iowa Association of School Boards has scenarios they call at the board table that give some scenarios of leadership challenges. And we talk about how we would handle that together. We always have a couple of times a year that we review our board ethics policy and make sure that we're all in alignment with our expectations of one another and our responsibilities. So I think the really important thing is our board does not take it for granted that we know how to lead and how to work together, but we structure it purposefully so that we continue to focus on that and develop our skills. And so that's how we accomplish that, is we don't take it for granted. We work on it.
Well, it doesn't happen by just chance. So I think you have something to do with that leadership there, Kristen, as well. So, all right, Kristen, in your Superintendent of the Year application, you talked quite a bit about the importance of relationships. So when you think about a highly effective relationship that you've been in, what are some of the words or phrases that you would use to describe that relationship?
I really do think relationships are critically important. Everything has to be done as a team. That's the only way to be successful in a complex world. So in those relationships, I think it's really important that they're mutually beneficial. So that's what a relationship is. We help each other. And so both people have to be willing to help each other and to benefit from each other and take some learning and some support. I think they need to be collaborative. And I really think they need to involve appreciation of one another and the gifts that everyone brings to the table and the skills and the strengths, so that we can really get the best out of that for everyone involved.
So earlier, Kristen, you mentioned when you were talking about the Finnish system that they have lots of people who want to go into education. And as you know, in the United States and in Iowa, we are feeling that teacher shortage. We have fewer and fewer applicants in our pools each opening that we have. So what are your ideas on how that we could attract and retain people to our profession?
Yeah, I really think we are unfortunately witnessing this nationwide where we've accepted as a nation a narrative that distrusts and devalues our educational system and our teachers in particular. And I find that such a paradox, because that has happened right on the heels of a time where during the pandemic, everyone was talking about teachers as heroes and as education systems as heroes, because we were providing food and instruction and security and safety in a very uncertain time. And very quickly after that, we've heard this narrative, and it's been accepted that teachers are not to be trusted and aren't valued. And I think that is the biggest barrier to people going into education, is that devaluing and detrusting what we do. And I feel strongly that those of us who know better, and there are lots of us in our communities, in our schools, in our governments, people who know what value educators bring and how critically important they are, need to step up and change that narrative. I can't speak to the forces that have brought that narrative about. I don't know, but what I do know is we need to stop that, because until we change that narrative, people are not going to want to go into education, and we will not see this turn around. And I think that is a critically important part of our work right now, is to change that narrative and tell the true story of what's happening in schools. Those of us who work with children know what a difference a teacher makes, not to mention support personnel and principals and everyone else involved. And we need to tell that story. And our future as an education system depends on that story. Unfortunately, we as educators don't like to sing our own praises, and we need to turn that around, because people need to hear the truth about what wonderful things we are doing for our communities and our children. And, you know, there certainly are some other things we should think about in terms of the teacher shortage, including wages and salary not being competitive with what other professions are with similar requirements, expectations, and education behind them. But I really don't think pay is the biggest driver. I think the biggest driver is value in the work and respect for the profession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Kristen, you serve on the Iowa Board of Educational Examiners. Have you have been a part of conversations at that state level on ways that maybe we could, you know, attract more to the profession?
Sure. So we really, the staff at the Board of Educational Examiners is to be commended. They do really excellent work. And part of that work is they really analyze the expectations and the requirements for teacher licensure. And they look at ways to remove barriers. But at the same time, they want to do that in such a way that does not diminish the quality and what that license means. So it's really important to hold that high standard while at the same time removing unnecessary barriers. So they've looked at some ways to do that. For example, they've compared Iowa to other states across the nation and particular surrounding states, looked at different requirements to see if we're in alignment with what sorts of requirements there are. And if not, then why not? And do we need to do something differently? And sometimes the answer is no, we believe these standards are exactly what they should be, but they take a look at that. We also, for example, have looked at special education licensure and how to remove some barriers with very specific silos and make it a little more open. So there's more flexibility within those requirements while not diminishing the level of standard that's required. So I think they work really hard, and we as a board try to support the work, but the staff does all the behind the scenes work to try to make sure that we're maintaining those high standards by removing unnecessary barriers. And some of those have had to do with things like applicants from other countries, how do you evaluate their experience and credentials, and applicants from other states, as well as how do you remove barriers for applicants within our own state. So they absolutely have worked on that.
Yeah. Kristen, I just want to thank you. I know how busy a superintendent job is anyway. And so then taking on where you're sitting on a board at the state level to support education. So thank you for taking that on as well and supporting educators across the state of Iowa. Yes. So Kristen, what advice would you give other administrators?
You know, it's kind of what I said before. I love this work. I just really think it's truly a gift to be a part of this and to have a seat at the table and to be able to give to help. And so it really is a gift. And there are some really challenging times. And if you get mired in those, you forget what a gift it is. And that's what makes it challenging. I think first, keep your eye on the fact that we are lucky to be a part of this system and to do this work. And yes, it's challenging because it matters. And so it's such a joy to be a part of it and to keep that at the forefront, even during challenging times, what a joy it is to be a part of it. And then, as I've said all along, faith in your teams, work with your people and take strength in them. So that's my biggest, two biggest pieces of advice. Remember what a gift it is to do this work, even during challenging times, and then put your faith in your teams.
Awesome. So you're, as a superintendent, you are supporting all a host of people, right? From your board to the students in the classroom and their learning. How do you foster your own professional learning?
Well, one of the things that I think is, like you said before, that I'm on several boards and committees, and I take so much learning from those. So yes, they do require for me to give a bit, but I always get so much more than I give because I learn from all the other people on the board. I learn from the perspective that they have. I learn from the information that's brought to us for decision-making. So I try to get involved as much as I can because that always fosters my own learning and growth. The other thing I do is I read as much as I can. I have the privilege of having a little more time in the morning since I don't have young children at home anymore. And so I try to read every day, and that gives me some insights and different ways to approach problems. But I think the biggest thing is trying to get involved so I can learn from other people on the committees and boards I serve on.
Thank you, Kristen, for your insight into what contributes to a successful superintendency. If you're looking to grow in your role, be able to think big and adapt quickly, translate strategy into meaningful work, and coach people to higher performance, join SAI Professional Learning Director Dana Schoen and your colleagues for the Four Essential Roles of Leadership, a four-part virtual workshop in late January and early February. Sign up on the SAI website no later than January 17th using the events link. Be sure to join us next month when we welcome the State Board of Education student member, Alana Whittington. We'll talk with her about ensuring opportunities for student voices to be heard and her experiences on the board.